Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had
Well, welcome back to Stacking Jacks. I'm Tonali, Mr. Matt Weber. On the phone, I was just thinking how many cousins, Eddie probably has there in the same boat. I'm broke. You don't do nothing. Just saying. SP Futures up 75 cents.
There's some for sure.
How many cousins do you think you got out there in Iowa?
In Iowa? First cousins?
Oh, that's where you're from.
I have a handful. Most of them don't live there, but I have, yeah.
Oh,
I have
that's
some.
Cool. Well, it's not so bad. Brendan, how are you?
I'm doing fine today. Man, what part of Iowa are you from?
I grew up in Cedar Rapids, like 3.5 hours west. And that's where my mom still lives. That's it. But my mom's still there.
You know, I'm really surprised that you play softball so well in Chicago style, because don't they only allow gloves over there when you're playing softball?
Yeah, over there they play 12-inch, and that's the game, and it's popular. They have a lot of national tournaments there, actually, and a lot of fields there.
I know. I played out there.
Yeah, and I love 12-inch, too. They're both fun games, but when I moved to the city, which was like 04, 05, so 16, 17 years ago, obviously everyone was playing 16-inch, and I got into that, and I actually like 16-inch better.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever play Fast Pitch 12? I never have.
No, that was...
Not Fast Pitch 12.
Yeah, I never played that. That was just girls that played that, but I know that there's men's leagues too. But
that's huge in Pennsylvania and Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the big teams are from. Is Pennsylvania all the big? When the King and His Court was from there, and all those guys, right, Brendan?
Yep, I remember the King and His Court. Those guys were amazing.
Oh yeah.
You know, Matty, I had the opposite thing. When I moved out to Arizona, my firm was in a softball league, and I said, "Come out and play." So I go out the first day with metal cleats and no gloves. And everybody looked at me like I'm crazy because nobody allowed metal cleats out there, and everybody played with a glove.
When did we ban the metal cleats here?
I don't know.
A long time ago.
It had to be sometime in the late 80s, early 90s when they wouldn't allow metal cleats.
It might have been earlier than that. It was a way. I mean, we had the bases were 55 feet when I started. Man, you were on a short center like there was no tomorrow. But I remember going to Maxwell Street because they. For a while, they banned anything that was kangaroo.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, if you've never had a pair of kangaroo shoes, they're light as a feather. So if you wanted to be, you know, what was it, PF Flyers, run faster, jump higher? If you wanted a pair of baseball cleats that were like wearing nothing, you get a pair of steel cleats that were kangaroo. And I went down to Maxwell mm-hmm. Street, and of course, even though they were bad, you could buy a pair in Maxwell Street just... A lot of things you get down there, Brendan, as they say.
A lot of things. And if you went to your car, put them back in your car, 10 minutes later, go back and buy them again.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh, absolutely. Anyway, so Brendan, being in the middle is a lonely spot, right? And it's interesting to me that I'm trying to view this election and all the stuff that's still going on, for God's sake, as, I'm on record for like 8 months ago saying that if we start doing this mail-in stuff way too fast, there's going to be nothing but complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I honestly believe from what I read, and of course, but I have several groups against me. Right, one is my significant other and her pals that are all amazingly right-wing. Not all of them, but most. Then a lot of people here in the office are the other way, and it's. Now, my view, and I'm asking you, counselor, because, you know, you're my sage on all this stuff, it seems
concierge.
So it seems to me that a lot of what I thought was going to happen did happen. That the election was in a lot of places very sloppy. That the checking of signatures wasn't near as good as it would be in a precinct. In some places, you know, damn near ridiculous. But I find no evidence that it's enough, or it's all one way to where the election isn't any good. I mean, to me, the winner, the guy who's, we say won. And, doesn't mean that in some states where the red people are in charge, that they couldn't wait to stop people from sending the stuff in by mail or whatever and denied people access essentially as best they could. And in the other states, the other side, like they always do, is find people that you don't know they ever even existed that voted. And it seems to me at the end of the day, they both cheat and it comes out kind of in a wash. You know, maybe some elections a little one way and some the other. So there's no, I mean,
Laugh at the senators that got the votes, and then they say, oh, well, that vote counted because it was for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't count because it wasn't for
Trump.
That's
one of the ridiculous things. I mean, it's insane. Think about it. So, some of the congressmen, too, even some of the first-time congressmen who are elected in places like Georgia and Michigan, who are saying, well, our votes counted, but his didn't. I mean, think of even the idea of the sophistication of a machine that would go in and identify one person's vote and for Trump, and then flip it to Biden, but leave everybody else the same.
But it can't ever be totally straight. I mean, you had the one or two counties, wherever many they were in Michigan, that the software didn't work and it flipped their
votes. That was completely debunked. Completely debunked.
I thought it. Anyway,
no, you gotta get off the right wing rags.
I'm not. My theme here is that when you talk to the people on the right, and if you say we need to do better on these elections, which I honestly think we do, I'm just glad that it wasn't even close. Right in my
mind, I'm glad it wasn't close either.
Yeah. So,
but let me tell you, Chief, that I agree with Maddie's comment that all of the theories of outright voter fraud, significant voter fraud, has been debunked. The idea that thousands of ballots were shredded in certain parts of the country has been debunked. The certifiers in all of these states, in Georgia, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, have all certified the veracity of their electoral results. There have been over 60 lawsuits filed in courts around the country, two cases to the United States. In some of those cases, Rudy Giuliani, on behalf of the president, was asked by a judge about the fraud and where's the evidence of the fraud. He couldn't provide it. In fact, in one case, the transcript says, this is not a fraud case. All of this stuff about fraud in the election being stolen is not credible right now. At this point, what the Republican leadership and under Ted Cruz are saying is, we don't care. We want our guy in, regardless of the cost, regardless of the electoral votes.
You see,
we're going to keep talking about it every day.
You see, my point is exactly made. You guys are on one side.
I'm not on a side. I don't care. I specifically talked about the two things that you keep bringing up, the electronic voter machines in Michigan. That was debunked.
What I'm trying to educate you two gentlemen is, if you're in the middle, if you talk
you're
to
in
one
a bubble. For
one,
God's
side,
sake.
One side, it's not.
I'm not on a side. I don't care. Well, I'm tired of hearing the right wing spew coming out every morning.
My point is that our elections on a national scale are an embarrassment, in a sense that why aren't they on a Sunday? Why aren't we try and
agree with you on that?
We've been saying that
for 15 years.
Why can't we make them better? But what I'm saying right now, if you're on the left, hey, all this stuff is okay. It's all BS. It's all been debunked. And the people on the right
will tell you it's
not all debunked.
What I'm saying is that the arguments that Cruz and the Republican leadership are fostering right now is dangerous to the country. They will not accept the election votes, the electoral votes from all the states that have been certified. When those states went through their certification process, they checked to see if it was voter fraud.
I never once said...
Absolutely, in every election, statewide, locally, nationally, there will be some election fraud. It's never going to be 100% accurate and without fraud at some level. But the massive amounts of vote fraud that they're talking about has not been demonstrated.
It has not been demonstrated.
Any veracity at all.
Even if there was.
They're crackpots. And they're even, they're even shifting the arguments right now. That it's no longer due to voter fraud. It's that millions of people don't like the election results, so we've got to overturn it.
Well, what I'm trying to get to at the end here, if you guys would ever let me, is that the idea that a state like Georgia, when you're fighting over 11,000 ballots, for all that, all the electoral votes to go one way, to me is horse bleep. Just like Florida and Bush versus Gore. Anybody who took a statistics course when they were 4 years old knows that that state was a dead heat. And the idea that one person has to get all the electoral votes is crazy.
As our guy Kevin O'Neill always says, and I agreed with him when he said it in 2016, and assuming he hasn't changed his opinion, he will say the same thing in 2020. If you want to change the Electoral College, get the votes to change it.
Well, you're never going to get
the,
but here's what we're running into as a democracy. And I'm getting up there. So, I mean, it's not going to change in my lifetime. But here's our problem we're running into. It's like, you know, four people voting for what they have for breakfast, and three of the people are wolves and one's a hen. I mean, you're never going to get the city of Chicago to vote for less than 50 wards, even if there's 50 people left here. You're never going to get the winners in an election to get rid of the Electoral College. Or at least.
Well, I don't think you're never going to get rid of the Electoral College for one reason, and that is that the smaller states and population who have an equal vote in the Senate right now are not going to give up that power. When you think of the population of Wyoming or Montana or Idaho, for example, compared with the population of California, New York, or I'll even throw up in the state of Texas in there, it's irrational to think that the people in Wyoming's vote counts the same as somebody in California's vote, because they don't. They have two senators per state. That was a decision made hundreds of years ago when they set up the country to avoid having a disproportionate amount of power in the larger states.
I'd get rid of the Electoral College tomorrow.
As long as Republicans have the majority in the Senate, or close to a majority in the Senate, and the chance to overtake the House, because of that system, they are not going to overturn the Electoral College.
I would go the Nebraska route for a while, where every congressional district.
I would too. I would do that tomorrow.
But the idea that there's a, you know, we're talking about bonanza where Ben Cartwright is flipping a coin as to whether it's Hoss or Little Joe, that's not the world today.
I would go to popular vote tomorrow. I would go the Nebraska Maine way, like you just referenced. I would do that tomorrow. I would get rid of the Electoral College immediately, but the Republicans would never do that because they're losing popular votes by 6-7 million votes in the presidential election.
I would go one step further, though, in addition, and I agree that getting rid of the Electoral College, calling for popular votes, would be fine, but there also has to be an examination of how the maps are drawn. Look at, for example, the state of Illinois, where the overall vote is close to 50-50 in every election, yet there's a supermajority in the hands of the Democrat in both the state and the House. And other states go the other way, where Republicans do that. So there has to be an objective way to divide up the districts. You can't gerrymander to rig the system.
Who's worse, do you think, Illinois or Texas? I'm going to say Texas. Who's worse, Illinois or Texas? I honestly think, from what I've read, Texas might be worse.
It might be, but isn't it either North Carolina or South Carolina where they just did the districts, and it's something like the population is something like 54-46 between Democrats and Republicans, with Republicans in the majority, and yet their legislature. Yeah, their legislative body and represented in Congress is something like 12 Republicans and 2 Democrats. And when asked, the guy who was in charge of the map said, well, we couldn't figure out a way to make it 13-1.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's right. I mean, if you want to reach for the air sickness bag, just look at, I believe it's whatever Gutierrez's district. Well, not Gutierrez, it's Chewy now, right?
Lemus, yeah.
Chewy.
Yeah, the one looks like Lemus. But I agree with you, Chief. But you know, at some point, the Republicans right now have to concede that they lost. And this argument that the reason that they're pushing so hard is because so many people are upset. Well, they're the ones telling them that there's fraud. And, you know, even if you say 70 million people are upset about this, if you were to automatically flip the other way, you'd have 80 million people who are upset the other way.
I'm... This, I think that the it's not lost on you guys, I don't think, but the politics has totally changed. But look what's happening right now, Brennan.
Twitter writers are pissed at both of you.
That's fine. Well, that's good.
That means you're doing something right.
Look at what's happening, Brennan. We've got McConnell. Now, of course, they're giving all this money to other people, so I'm not saying I'm for or against this. But everybody who's running for office, or anybody who's new, or anybody feels they got a spot that they're worried about, is clamoring for the $2,000 check versus the $600.
Mm-hmm.
So McConnell is basically telling people, this is old school politics. Take the heat. I'll take the heat. You guys say whatever you want, how you're for it, but it's never going to happen. Right?
Yeah.
So, and the same thing is happening with the election. Everybody knows Biden won. So, but what's happened in our day, Brennan, not that our day is past, hopefully it isn't. In our day, the trick was, if you were on the left, you ran over to the left, you got money from the guy, the tree huggers, you took a long shower, and you moved back to the middle where the votes were. Mm-hmm. Same way on the right. You went to God knows who, Mr. Gun Guy in Wyoming, and got money from him, and then got out of there as fast as you could and went back to the middle where the votes were. That's not what they do today. If you come out right now and say Trump won and the whole thing was a disaster on the Republican side, in your mind, you're solidifying the 20 or 25% hardcore vote, and you're willing to take your chance on the middle. It's a whole different world. I don't like the new world. You know, where there's 20% of both sides, and everybody just takes their chances on the middle. That to me is not, that's crazy, but that's where we are. So if you're a Republican right now, even if you can't stand Trump, to solidify yourself, and nobody's going to remember 2-4 years from now, and nobody ever does. If you jump up there now and say this election was all BS and blah blah blah, you've got some people that 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 6 years from now, wherever you're running, are going to remember that and vote for you because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean it, all these people, like you say, even these guys aren't dumb enough to know that the ballot that elected you wasn't right for you and wrong for the other guy. I mean,
I know. That's
is anybody that stupid? I mean,
I think they are that stupid.
Oh, well, I hope there aren't. They aren't. I mean, I would.
Well, they're that smart to know that their followers are that stupid.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the thing that, since we've been doing the show, Manny, and we've been covering every topic there is known to man, the thing that frosts me the most is how stupid these politicians think we are, and maybe we are. The question is, they either think we are, which is an insult, or we really are. I don't know what that is. That's a description.
Well, I've got two other points on this, Chief. First of all, when you look at the lawsuit that Comer filed to have Pence effectively be a one-man electoral college for the entire country, instead of having it's a good way to save money. Instead of every 4 years, we just allow the vice president to name the presidential winner, regardless of what the votes are. But also the idea of states' rights, when you're looking at the challenges, Texas against Georgia and the other states that they sued, what happened to Republicans' idea of states' rights, small government and states' rights, let every state control their own government
and their own
election laws?
Brennan,
the second point that's related to this, you mentioned before, was the COVID vaccination, and one of the things that I am really surprised at right now is seeing how many signs are now being held up by conservatives. And I will go out on a limb here and say that many of these are right-to-lifers who are also now saying that regardless of vaccination, my body, my choice. I'd like to see that same, at least open-mindedness to consider that same argument on other issues.
I don't have a big issue with people who don't want a vaccination. There's enough people that want it.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you on that too. If you don't want to take the vaccination, don't. I don't care.
Brendan, one of our guys sent me some stuff.
I don't think that can be mandated.
As long as it actually works,
that cannot be mandated.
I think
that there should be education to show more reasons why you should be vaccinated. But I agree that you can't mandate that.
Brennan, I think I sent it out. I'm not sure if I did, but so you might already have it, and Maddie. But didn't they say if you vaccinated like 8% of the or 10% of the population of people over 75, you knock off 75% of the deaths?
I don't remember seeing that.
But it was. I mean, if you inoculated the people over 85, which is like 1% of the population, that's like 15-20% of the deaths. So, and I got to believe everybody in nursing home is going to take this vaccine so they can have visitors and do the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean you get an amazing slice of the problem, the death problem, just by taking care of old people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that are 16 really don't need it. I mean, you're better off having it, but you're not going to die from it. I mean, of course, there's going to be somebody somewhere in Outer Mongolia that dies from it. So we'll get that tweet as well. But this is starting to affect everything we do. We're having the teachers now striking because they don't want to go back to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Now's the time to get rid of the union, in my opinion. You know what? I mean, everybody else is working. A lot of other people are working. That bus driver, he deserves to work in case I want to take the bus, but I get to stay home and get paid. At some point here, I don't ever want to force anybody to go to work or do anything, Brendan, but at some point you're not getting paid to stay home. I mean, that's a decision we can make. So what do you think of your mayor has decided now to turn on the speed cameras and charge everybody going over 6 miles an hour over the limit, 35
miles. When did you move out of the city of Chicago?
I'm saying that this is the kind of crappy stuff that COVID and election is starting to becoming endemic in everything we do regarding governments. The stupid decisions.
No, but when you say your mayor, last time I thought you were still within the city of Chicago. So, she's your mayor too.
I know, but I'd rather have her be known.
She's more your mayor than Brendan's.
I'd rather her be known as your mayor than mine.
He's in Michigan half the time.
So, but bold face, she says, "This is how we're going to get rid of the deficit from COVID." Now,
yeah, it's being marketed ostensibly as a safety measure, but that's absolute crap. We know it's not true, that it's a moneymaker.
So,
and I think there's going to be a huge pushback within the next 6 months because you're going to find a lot of people in different parts of the city who are being caught in this. And originally I thought that this was one of those things where the cameras were around school zones, ostensibly for the protection of the kids. And you know, it's a reach, but there's some basis to that as a legitimate argument. However, the enforcement, if you're having the cameras on at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday night, it's not because of the kids in school. It's a moneymaker.
Well, when are we going to get to the point where when we have some bleep aldermen, of course, it's always going to be parking because they park in the street. Do you think, mm-hmm. think Lori Lightfoot's ever going to pay a ticket from her limousine coming in the morning?
No. Well, I mean, her, just like with Rahm Emanuel, her security detail has been caught going through red lights.
That's okay, though. That's them. It's all about two sets of rules, Brendan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that. And unfortunately, that's also true at the national level, at an even bigger level, which I think really goes to the question about the legitimacy of most politicians and what they say.
Well, why is
destructive to the country and the idea of democracy.
So what are the details on this?
To 9 miles an hour over the limit is 35.
I get that, but where are the cameras? Where are the radars? Do they have signs telling you?
There probably is a sign.
There has to be signs telling you this is a 6 mile hour zone or whatever. I mean, they don't have radar on every street corner. Does anyone know the details?
Yeah, I went to. I don't
know.
I want to know where every checkpoint is. I wanted to see a sign.
I could have.
I want to know the hours. Is it 24 hours a day?
They'll even tell you what direction, because all of them don't get you from both directions.
I was talking about entrapment.
I was on this site yesterday, and when you asked me, I could if I was still headed up. I could rattle them off, but they're not in order. So there's probably 20-some pages of 15 a page. They're all over the city. But it'll say, like, there's one right by my brother's at 111th Street, 111th near Pulaski. But it'll say it'll say the direction it'll get you from, and it says westbound. So not all of them are westbound and eastbound, or southbound and northbound. They only have a certain direction they get you from. So when you see the one at, there's one at, like, on Ashland Avenue, just north of North Avenue. So I'm thinking that one only gets you southbound because coming the other way, you're coming right out of the light, so you're probably not coming fast enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they're if you want to look, they're all over the place. You can spot the ones that are around your house.
Yeah, and it makes sense that in that situation, you get it when you're going towards the light because if you see the light, the numbers on the the sign next to it counting down, you're going to increase your speed to get through the intersection.
Well, I don't know.
If you see it turning yellow, you're going to get through the intersection, so you're going to speed up and more likely to be caught.
Well, don't assume there's any logic to it, Brendan. They're just there. They're just catching people. Well, the one on 111th Street...
That's not logic. That's forethought to how to get more money, because the point is you're not going to put it in the direction where they're coming off a light, because if you're at a red light, you're going to be slow getting off the mark, but if you're trying to beat the light, you're going to increase your speed.
Matter of fact, Matty, if you want to be a genius on this, everyone on the chart, it'll give you the absolute direction the thing's pointed to, in terms of some degree latitude and longitude. It'll tell you which direction it's pointed. Now, what anybody does with that information, I have no idea. But that's
great information if there happens to be one right by your block, and you know that when you're coming home or when you're going to work, to avoid this stretch of Racine or Clybourne or something like that, you know where it is. It doesn't do a lot of information for somebody who's just driving around the city generally, because there are too many places to know.
Well, in my opinion, it shouldn't be on the side streets anyway. If you wanted to put it on the Ryan or the Edens or something like that, where people are going 110 miles per hour.
We don't want to get those people.
I got no problem with that, because that's actually dangerous. And it's especially during COVID, when the traffic's been lighter and people can really fly around the expressways. I got no problem with that. If you put a section on all of the expressways where everyone's going 100 miles per hour and said, if you go a mile over, 70 or 75 or something, we're going to get you. I got no issue with that. But on Ashland, when you're going 35 miles per hour, if it accidentally ticks up to 40 or 41 or something like that, I mean, that's insane.
Yep.
It's only $35. It doesn't say it's going on your record from 6 to 9. They just want the money.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Okay, but see, that's okay for somebody like you who's got deep pockets, can afford multiple tickets at $35. When that same person gets a ticket, but they live at 63rd and Green, it's going to add up to a lot of times, and that's where you're going to see some pushback that it's economically detrimental to certain parts of the country.
I'm going to say that those people aren't going to pay. They don't pay the parking ticket.
And that's going to cause more of a backlash, just like it did with the parking tickets. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that Lightfoot put a moratorium on parking tickets because it was affecting people's livelihoods when their cars were booted.
I can tell you some stories about parking tickets next week. I mean, there's nothing more invasive than their... I know somebody who had a business license, and because he had to put his name on the business license, got dinged for some parking tickets that his ex-wife got. They had been divorced for 5 years, 10 years, like 15 years
ago. I can tell you that same story for me. When I was working at Chicago Public Schools, they did a search, and this was in around 2010 or so, they did a search. And I was almost fired from CPS because my former wife had a ticket 5 years after I was divorced, legally divorced, 5 years after I was divorced, but the license plate showed up in both of our names. She got some parking tickets that she didn't pay. And here it was 15 years after that I had to pay the tickets in order to keep my job.
Well, good Lord.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know what, Manny, if you, for instance, co-sign for somebody and they get a parking ticket, you're liable on the loan in the city's mind.
It's not only parking tickets, but it's any water bills or anything connected with the city that if they do a search and you're even a dollar short on a water bill from 2 years ago, you cannot get additional benefits from the city or get a job with the city.
Now, how do they pull this off when it's all illegal? I mean, anyway, we'll talk about this next week, Brendan. Are we going to crash the market here real quick?
Looks like it.
If we do, that's the only leg of the economy that's standing.
I think that's going to be dependent on what happens tomorrow. I think depending on how long it takes them to get through the votes of the Senate will have a bearing on what the market thinks is going to happen. But I think maybe even in anticipation of a long day tomorrow and a lot of contentiousness that you're going to see a downswing in the market today.
What's your prediction tomorrow? Mine's 1-1.
Yours what?
Is 1-1. One Democrat, one Republican wins. Is my prediction.
I'm not following you. One Democrat, then, one Republican.
Well, we
wins
got
what?
two elections in Georgia, right?
Oh, yeah. I still think that Georgia's going to go Republican. I think they're both going to get reelected.
Well, the one lady lost huge in the first one. She'd have to make up a lot of votes.
But look, she lost But Warnock, the guy she's running against, only had 39% of the vote. She lost because there were multiple people running against her.
But she had like 32.
Well, remember the way, here's a little bit of history lesson. The reason why that law is the way it is in Georgia goes back to Reconstruction times. Because in Reconstruction, they found out that many white voters or many white politicians were running, and they would beat each other up in the primary or in the election. And you would sometimes find black politicians winning with 35-40% of the vote. So they changed the law to make it that in Georgia, you had to have more than 50% of the vote. And if you didn't, there had to be a runoff election between the two winners.
So, Brent, like the case of Leffler and Warnock,
he got 39, she got 35. But when they go head-to-head, all of the votes went for the other Republicans will now go to her, and he'll still get his 49 or 39 votes, 39%, but she will win handily.
Well, we'll see. All right. Well, we'll talk about it next week. SP Futures down 8 now. SP Futures down 20. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures, we had a crazy morning. We're up, down, now we're down 7. NASDAQ Futures down 13. We started up last night. We were still up somewhat this morning, and all of a sudden now we're down. Dow Futures down 67. Again, we had a crummy day yesterday, and it was the first down opening to a year since 2016. I don't know if that means anything, but that's at least the story. The DAX down 103.7%. FTSE down 8. Call that flat. CAC around down 44.8%. Now, FTSE was way up yesterday. The Asia probably wasn't up by the time the day ended, but just yesterday morning it was. Nikkei down 99.4%. Shanghai up 25.7%. Hang Seng up 177.4%. The New York Stock Exchange, I'll talk about this with Joel in a second. New York Stock Exchange now is not going to delist the three stocks that Trump said they're supposed to delist. So, in again, out again. Kind of crazy stuff. You know, yesterday is a review. Dow down 382. At one point it was down over 600. It's 1.25%. S&P down 55, 1.5%. And NASDAQ down 189, 1.5%. So pretty good move down. 10-year, 0.93, kind of right where it's been. The Bund, minus 0.59, right where it's been. Japan, positive 0.02. So all this stuff, all this craziness in the stock market, the bond market has been absolutely steady now for about 8 weeks, which is really nuts. Oil up 67 cents, 48.29, as inflation is starting to rear its ugly head. Brent up 72 cents, 51.81. Natural gas up 9 cents, back up to 267. RBOB down a penny, or up a penny, I'm sorry, to 139. So it's been been hanging around at 140 now for a while. Gold up another 690, 1953. Silver up another 21 cents, 2757. Copper up 4 cents, 359. Boy, this copper was an unbelievable buy. It got down to like 240. Maddie, how much of that you got in your portfolio?
Good question.
Do you got any pennies? I got a huge bucket of pennies. At least I got those.
Yeah. Does that count towards your portfolio?
Well,
I suppose it does.
Copper got to like 10 bucks, it might.
You know. 39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet on the area expressway so far, Chief. Only issue is out in the southwestern suburbs on I-80. Eastbound side at Cherry Hill Road, that's near Joliet, there's a stalled semi that's blocking a lane, causing a slowdown as folks navigate around that. But everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a pleasant early January day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 38. Right now it's overcast and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, absolutely nothing to report from last night. Bulls were off, college teams were off, no football as we head into the playoffs. But the Bulls are back in action tonight, looking to get to 500. They're 3-4. They'll take on Portland at 9:30 p.m. Chicago time in Portland. Chief.
I think I won't wait up for that.
Me neither.
Just saying, you know. There were fans there. Joel, how are you, buddy? Do we have Joel? We did.
We did have him. I'll have to get him back on.
We'll have to get him back in. Anyway, S&P futures now down 10.50. Boy, these things are all over the block. Yesterday, the NASDAQ, I don't think we get Joel on, he can confirm or deny this for me, but the NASDAQ at one point made it back to being down like 6. And it couldn't have been 20 minutes. It was down like 180. I mean, it was just an amazing. And I had no idea where that was coming from. But all of a sudden, we really sunk mid-morning yesterday and really... And I would say we got down, NASDAQ was down well over 200 and made its way back to maybe like a third of its way back, where the Dow made half its way back. But it was really a lot uglier than the end of the day yesterday, if somewhere during the middle. So anyway, individual stocks, not much going on here in the Dow. I don't really see anything moving more than a dollar, which is unusual, even though the Dow is down 60 bucks. I've got Apple down 50 cents. I've got Cisco down 25 cents. Coke down 32 cents, so not much happening. Yesterday, the one stock that was up all day was Tesla. And now, today I've got it down a dollar and a quarter, but I had some clients that were thinking about, hey, Joel, how are you, bud?
Good, Chief. I don't know what happened there. I didn't know if you booted me off the show.
Oh, God, no. How can we possibly replace you? There's no Joels out there like you.
I have to agree with that, Chief, but... what are we talking? Are we talking markets, or are we talking sports?
You can tell me what exactly happened around 9:30 or 10 o'clock yesterday when the NASDAQ futures got to be only down 5 or 6, and 20 minutes later down like 200. What was it?
Well, my simplest guess is that everyone that didn't want to take profits in 2020... They could sit on the money, which makes no sense to me because taxes could be going up. But everyone waited until the first trading day. And then they hooked their sell button, and I just think it kind of crescendoed. I think that would be the easiest explanation. I mean, you could throw COVID in there, but you did not have a lot of profit taking at the end of the year because people didn't want to pay the taxes. And I think that's what you had.
What, is the drumbeat about inflation doing anything, or is it not there yet?
It's there. I mean, we talk about it on the show every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about the inflation of assets. But, when will it matter? You know, when it will matter is when, you know, your real growth really starts to slow down. And then you have rising prices and declining economy. So that's, as you know, that's when you run into real problems. And right now, the economy is still just kind of limping along. It's not, it's not down, it's not out, but it's certainly not growing gangbusters by any means.
Depends on how much you, I use the term take it apart. I'm very concerned right now, Joel, that when you get I don't know how you even make the alliteration that if all of a sudden you're on a wagon train and you don't have any water, you make it probably 10, 15 days without a whole lot of water pretty easily, then it becomes harder and harder. I mean, right now I think we have a lot of businesses that are really hanging by a thread. And every week now that things don't get better, those places are falling. It's not like in April where, hey, the saloon's going to be closed for 2 months. We're not going to go out of business this week. But now I'm seeing more places go out of business than I have, way more than in May and April. But, I mean, I think that you got people that are dragging here. And I think your airlines, your companies, these cruise lines, I mean, it's been damn near a year. How can they possibly be hanging in there? I mean, how much money can they be getting? I think on some levels, Joel, I think it's darkest before the dawn. Assuming we have a dawn, I think it is getting to be darkest before the dawn for a lot of the.
Yeah, I mean, Chief, I mean, the market is acting totally irrationally, right? In the face of a global pandemic, we've wet and fire exceeded new all time highs. The factors are in there. I'm as baffled as you are, Chief. I took some money off of the table, during 2020. I never really redeployed the full amount that I took out. I stuck with everything. I swallowed my throat, choked on my tongue, rolled the stuff back up, and it's like, I just can't add up here. People are like, what are your top three stocks for the year? What are you adding to? I'm like, I can't add at this level. I had an opportunity to add at much lower levels, and I lightened up. So it's so hard to time the market. I'm glad I stuck with everything that I had. But, as I always say, where are you at in your investment horizon? I'm a little bit older. You're a little bit older. A young buck like Maddie, he's just got to keep putting money to work in the market. But, man, if you're near retirement age, your kid's going to college. I don't really know about the whole college situation. I'm worried about the colleges. I'm worried about the restaurants. I'm worried about the laundromats. I'm worried about just about everything, but it doesn't matter, Chief. Yesterday it mattered. Will it matter today or for the next 6 months or for the entire year? I don't know. But at this point, all the things that we talk about, all the things that we worry about, don't matter.
No, they obviously don't.
Trump and Powell put money into the economy and a reckless abandon, this is what you're going to have. You're going to have inflated asset prices.
Well, I think you're probably right, Joel. We'll talk at you next week. Happy New Year.
No sports.
Well, we're running out of time here, bud.
Because you were late.
That's right. We were late.
Well, Michigan.
I just want to tell you two things. This Harbaugh situation is getting really weird.
I thought they hired him.
No, he hasn't signed the contract.
Oh, I thought they agreed. I'm me bad.
Well, unless I didn't see something overnight. He has a contract. He's sitting on it. And there's major rumor discussions. He's close to an extension. He's sitting on the contract, talking about going to the Jets. I don't know if the Jets want him. Something weird's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to retire or what, but that's with Harbaugh. And Michigan basketball looking good under Juwan Howard. I love this team. We're 8-deep. So Michigan basketball.
I think Juwan Howard's going to have a spectacular career, and I wish him all the best.
Southside guy.
Yeah. He's from the south side. How can I not?
That's right.
There we go. Take care, Joel. SP Futures down 8, now NASDAQ Futures down 9. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and the chicks are free.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Melbourne on the board. Mr. Kenny Polcari with us. Now the S&P Futures is only down 5. We're all over the place here this morning. Kenny, would you say the world started to go sour when MTV wasn't just really good music and really good-looking girls?
Yeah, it started somewhere. I'm not exactly sure, but the craziness has really gotten incredibly stronger over the last year for sure, but really over the last 8 or 9 years as the world has changed so much. And you know, everything gets called into question, from investing to politics to a range of other issues. So it is the world we live in.
Kenny, can you take one of these apart for me a little bit? Because you are way closer to this action than me. You were on the New York floor when they allowed Alibaba to essentially not adhere to any rule ever. And all of a sudden, the thing is there. And from what I understand, and you know more than me, you're part of an income stream out of Bermuda. All the assets are owned by Jack Ma personally, and the Chinese government has a chance to pull them back anytime they feel like it, which is now something happening. Now we've got the three other companies that Trump wants delisted, so the New York Stock Exchange says they're delisting them. And now they must feel that Trump's out there, have to pay attention to them. Now they're back being listed again. Why the hell should these things be listed here? And what possess a guy like me to put your dad's money in one of those stocks?
Well, you may not, right? I mean, listen, I have no problem that they're listed here. It doesn't necessarily mean that you as a wealth advisor or an asset manager or financial advisor need to put anybody's money in any of those stocks for reasons that you've all pointed out. Whether or not they're listed here or not is fine. I mean, because it's what capital is all about, because everyone has a chance to be exposed. Alibaba was always considered to be kind of a Chinese proxy. If people wanted exposure to China and they wanted to feel as if they were here in the United States, they could control it. It was easy to buy and sell. So there are a bunch of reasons why, but it doesn't mean just because they're listed here that you need to put money into it. And so I agree with you. I never have. You can scream all you want about the Alibaba story, how successful it was, but I for one wasn't comfortable, right? I didn't, for all the reasons you bring up, I'm just not, I just wasn't comfortable. So I don't think just because it's listed here that anyone should feel, the need to have to put money there. You put money there because you think the story's right, or you think the fundamental story's right, or you think it fits your risk profile. But,
well, Kenny, if, normally when a foreign entity is listed here, it's a DVR, right?
Yeah, it's an ADR.
ADR, sorry. DVR is plays movies back, right, or something? That's ADR. Okay. But, I mean, because there was someone in Cebu, Florida, where we had Pemex, and we had some other, what's the concrete, What's a concrete code?
All the foreign stocks are basically ADRs, right? They trade in the mother country, and then they trade here in American Depository Receipt Four.
So, but if you were, you know, say you're a specialist and you're like, you know, big enough, or certainly, you could conceivably, if it's a Mexican company, you could buy pesos and actually do the ARB. If it got way more expensive here than down there, you could buy it down there, right? I mean, there is somewhat of an ARB. It's sloppy, but what would possess us to put up stock on the exchange from a place that we can't trade? I mean, we still can't trade in China. So
we can't, but I will tell you, the specialists that are on the floor that have ADRs and foreign companies listed there, a lot of them had desks or divisions upstairs that would do exactly what you said, right? They'd try to arbitrage the currency and figure out if it was expensive here, they'd sell it. If it was cheap there, they'd buy it. If it was cheap here, they'd buy it. Expensive there, they'd sell it based on what the currency was doing. That was just part of the risk management process that a lot of these market makers would use, and rightly so. They should do it because they needed to manage their risk. But again, you and I may not do that. Maybe we don't have the ability to do it. Maybe I don't have the wherewithal to do it. Maybe I'm not interested in doing it on behalf of the client. And I'm not necessarily sure that you know, a U.S. retail client that you're managing money for is really going to have a desire to want to do that anyway. And so therefore, you know, I hear the question and I understand it, but it's not something I've ever come across.
No, but the idea that we, not just you and me, anybody here, can't trade Chinese telecom in China, why would we ever let it listed here?
Well, because I think it's opportunity, right? I mean, it was opportunity certainly for the markets, for the exchanges. It was opportunity. It was opportunity for capitalism, right? Showing, giving availability and the opportunity for people to be able to, because you can't necessarily trade in China. But if China was this, you know, this economy that was growing and you wanted exposure, the way to get the exposure was by ADRs. Listen, the same was true in Mexico. The same was true when, you know, we got Russian stocks, we got Italian stocks, we got, you know, it was just easier to buy if you wanted to buy individual names, right? You could certainly go and buy a mutual fund, an international mutual fund, and you're just buying a mutual fund and you're allowing the portfolio manager to make all the decisions. But if you wanted to be more active and you wanted your own direct exposure, ADRs was the way to do it. So therefore, there was a real market. I'm not saying that they trade, they don't trade as easily, for sure. I mean, some of the big ones might, but some of the other ones, you know, you could come in one day and the stock closed at 20, and the next day you come in because there's a currency change, and all of a sudden the thing is, you know, down 5 points or up 5 points that you had no control over. But if you played in those markets and you played in those ADRs, you knew that going in, and if you didn't know it, you learned that lesson very quickly when suddenly you said, what the hell happened to the price? You suddenly learned because of the currency arbitrage that, you know, you could be up or down a number of points on any one day.
All right, but it leads me to my major question here. If it's not an ADR, what is it? What exactly am I buying? If I buy Chinese,
but it is an ADR. No, it is an ADR. Right? Anything that's listed on the New York Stock Exchange is an ADR. So it is, you know, it's not usually one for one. Like a lot of ADRs are, you know, might be 10 for one, right? So 10 underlying Chinese shares for every one ADR, right? And they're all different, so you have to know what you're buying. But
Alibaba is not an ADR. Alibaba was listed here. You get the income stream out of Bermuda or something.
In this case, Alibaba is not an ADR, but we're talking about ADRs, right? So the ADRs.
Well, so the other three we're talking about, they are ADRs.
Correct.
Okay, I didn't think they were. So thank you. That's why I asked you, because I knew you'd know the answer.
But it's basically a U.S. listed stock, and it certainly trades like one. It doesn't have that exposure to the currency because of the way they designed it. But they did that because, I think, and I wasn't certainly part of the investment banking team that brought that deal to the United States, but remember all the hoopla around it. Remember what it was, and it was this massive entree into giving exposure to the Chinese market to everyday Americans, right? Well, this was the proxy.
Well,
the way that they were going to do it.
What do you suppose happens?
There's a lot of Listen, follow the money, right? There's a reason that it comes like that. There's a reason that they bring it to the market. There's a certainly fees to the exchange, fees to the investment bankers that brought it, fees to, you know, opportunity for average Americans to get exposure in a much more direct way to a market that they probably can't get exposure to.
Well, Kenny, what do you, there's going to be, you would never do this, but there's going to be some bump on CNBC or Fox or someplace that's going to come out and say, don't worry about your Alibaba stock, because in my opinion, the Chinese government would be ill-advised to screw the stock up so much that people lost all their money. Okay, that's an opinion, right? It's probably the correct opinion, but how does that guy have any idea what the Chinese government is thinking?
Well, he does it clearly, like you just said. That's an opinion, which then again goes right to the risk. Story, right? If you're unsure of what potentially the Chinese government can do, and look, we both know at any moment the Chinese government would change their mind and pull everything back, and then you're there holding the bag, right? So you have to know that going in, and so either you allocate a small percentage, you're certainly not going to allocate a huge percent of your portfolio to a stock into a country that you don't really understand how they could or could not control. It's a great trading stock because it moves all over the place. So as a trader, you love it because it's got volatility in it, and you can go in and out all day long, right? It's liquid, it's thick, you can buy it, you can sell it rather easily. But the people that are buying it, long-term investors that are buying it, they have to be fairly sure, A, what they're buying, and fairly confident that China's going to play by the rules and that they're not. And so that was always a concern for me. And so therefore, that's why I think there's other opportunities in the U.S. capital markets that, you know, that I would offer to, or I would have a conversation with clients about where to put your money, right? Like I said, Alibaba, a lot of the international names, they come with risk, and the client has to understand that.
What, yesterday, shake you up at all? I mean, in terms of the market levels?
No, not at all. I actually was rooting when the market was down 700. I'm sitting here quietly rooting for it to get down more because, you know, I'm a long-term investor, not a day trader. I'm looking for this market to back off, as are a lot of people, because we are extended. The Santa Claus rally took us to stretch valuations once again. So what's interesting, you know, at one point the Dow was off nearly 3% when it was down 700 points, 2.5% or 2.75%. If you listen to the news, they were making it sound like the end of the world was coming. Are you kidding me? It's down 2%.
Yeah.
Well within the normal. Listen, anything below 10% is considered well within the normal trading range. So quite honestly, I'm looking for the market to back off more, and I think you're going to get that tomorrow because I am convinced that, you know, Trump has handed the Georgia win to the Democrats. I'm just convinced that he has. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm convinced that he has. And then I think there's going to be the hangover, right? I think people are going to go, okay, fine. Now at least we know we have, because the market likes certainty versus uncertainty, which is exactly where it is right now. It can deal with certainty, but it'll reprice, and then it'll start to form a foundation. I'm kind of hoping we see the market back off more because while I'm invested already, I've got more money to put to work, the same way you do, the same way other clients do, other investors do. And I just wrote my note this morning, you know, people that are saying, you know, I'm waiting for the market to pull back so I can jump in. What the hell are you waiting for? You got to be in it to win it, number one, and doesn't mean you have to use all your ammunition in one purchase. You feed yourself in and you wait. You be patient. That's the whole point of long-term investing.
Do you have any concerns whatsoever that the Fed has blown by so fast that all of a sudden one of these days they're going to get an inflation number to where they can't keep doing what they're doing?
Absolutely. You and I talked about that too, and I put that in my note yesterday morning, the first day of the new year. I'm absolutely concerned that, you know, as much as the Fed says, oh yeah, rates are going to stay low through 2022, I think that's a huge bet. 24 months is a long time to make a bet like that because so much can happen. And my sense is, and you're starting to see it now, that more people are, more analysts and strategists are raising their head and talking about the potential for inflation to rear its ugly head summer of 2021. And while the Fed tells us they're prepared to let it run a little hot, define what a little hot is. Is it 2.5%? Is it 3%? My guess is if it starts to break 2.5%, then it has the ability, and you and I know this because we lived here in 1980 when rates shot up to 21% and the Fed was behind the eight ball all the time. And you remember what happened to the economy, and you certainly remember what what happened to the stock market.
Yeah.
I am very concerned because I think we're in a place that we've never been before. It's like uncharted, Starship Enterprise, right? And so we don't know where we're going, and we don't really know what it's going to look like on the other end. So, yes, I am concerned, but I think that's a second half of 2021 event. But what you're going to start to see is you're going to start to see them floating balloons, right? What they'll do is they'll have someone like Neil Kashkari come out at some conference and make a comment like, maybe we're thinking of pulling back or inflation, and that's how they're going to test the market, the way they do all
well,
the
time. If they do that,
the balloons they see.
If they do that, Kenny, it'd be a sad day for people that are long.
I hear you.
Hey, by the way, if you talk to that guy, tell him he needs a new tube. The combination Goodbye. of his toupe and his whatever his camera at home was bad, Kenny. Take care of yourself, buddy. Happy New Year. SP Futures down 2 now. NASDAQ Futures down 4. We'll be right back. Who do we have? We have Jeff?
We got Jeff.
We have Jeff. Cool. Wow, we're starting a new year with the big man. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low and low-paced stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P Futures down 6, NASDAQ Futures down 18. We've been all over the place here, whether we're going to try and buy the dip from yesterday or whether we're going lower. As of now, the jury is still out. Jeff, how are you, buddy? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing good. All right, tell us who's going to win the Georgia race. You're the guy with your finger on the money on this thing. Everybody else is just winging opinions around.
Well, it's tight. The money's tight, too, which is not usually the case. In fact, I'll give you a quick update. Looking at the special, which is, let's see, well, I'll tell you exactly where we stand right now. The Purdue is a slight favorite, 53 cents to Ossoff at 48 cents. That's where that looks right now.
Purdue's the guy who had the 49, he was the guy who had the 49.7, the Republican. He's the guy who just didn't make it to 50%, right?
That's right. But in the betting odds, though, in the special election, you have Warnock significantly in front at 61 cents. Of course, those are priced with binary options, so the penny reflects the probability and odds. So 61 cents implies, you're buying for 61, you're selling at 100, and a 61% outcome. So it's a split race that shows Warnock win beating Loeffler and Purdue beating Ossoff. So that would also result in one Democratic seat and one Republican seat, and the Republicans retaining control of the Senate.
So 51-49, but it's all you need
yeah,
is...
it's super tight. It's and now these are the betting odds, and they're not polling, but they still have a material margin of error. So let's call it a complete toss-up. That's what it would be.
Jeff,
I the best bets on predicted, though, just to finish out the equation, when you take those two kind of 50-50 toss-up scenarios, that leans, obviously, that there won't be a Democratic sweep. There's a couple plays on predicted, the legal, stock market for politics, that allows you to bet against or for a Democratic sweep. And you can pick those bets up now at about 50 cents with a one-to-one payout, which implies high expected value, because the odds of the Democrats prevailing, because they need two out of two, would be only 25% if there were 50-50 toss-ups. So if you can pay 50% or 50 cents for that same outcome, you're getting a high expected value. So there's a real strong betting opportunity for those who feel that the Democrats will not take control of the Senate. That is materially underpriced right now.
Jeff, what is the? I don't know if you're an expert in senatorial politics, but probably more so than me. What exactly does a 51-49? I mean, every time you see a vote, even if it's a big vote, there's always like a couple of people that don't. Do you still have to go to this? To the place to vote? I mean, you can't be home sick or in a hospital or some damn place and lob in your Senate vote, can you? How I guess my question is, how workable is a majority of that's 51-49? It can't be easy. Or is it? I don't know. I don't know the rules.
Oh, you mean on the actual Senate? The Senate still has this arcane rule that has not been COVID-adjusted that requires you to vote on certain legislation. I'm not sure what that distinction is, but it's fair to say major legislation requires an in-person vote. So that's come up in recent months when some people had COVID and were forced to quarantine. That precludes their vote. There was no workaround. They could not come into the chamber and cast a vote because they had required isolation or quarantine. So there is... voting in person is still the mandate for, important votes, but I'm not sure how that distinction is set. But obviously something like Puerto Rican statehood or Supreme Court packing or overturning a veto, those would certainly require in-person vote. There is no accommodation right now for voting remotely.
How much power does it give one person? A lot.
Welcome to our world. Exactly right.
Which is not. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying.
That is our system.
You would think that out of course, I guess I'll ask. I keep asking these questions because it turns out my listeners or my contributors know more than me about these subjects. How many bills? I mean, we looked at this last bill. It was 5,400 pages or some ridiculous number, and I'm going to say that half of it. With stuff that was sitting around just looking for any bill, give me a bill and I'll put myself on there. The state of Illinois does things once in a while, maybe by accident, that's pretty good. Our Senator Matt Murphy, who's come out once in a while he was still a senator, said that Illinois a while ago, now I don't know how long ago, said that basically they went to a one subject, one bill type of style, which he said, said even if the two sides are fighting like there's no tomorrow, because there's stuff that passes. I mean, there's stuff about a veteran's home or something, because there's stuff passing all the time that both sides agree on. That it's just a single bill to fund this or fund that or not fund this, not fund that. Does that happen at all? How many bills pass a week? There's going to be bills of like approving like a colonel or something in the Army that I don't think anybody bitches about, but. How many legitimate bills pass a month? Is it 2, 10? I have no idea.
Well, a lot of things pass. I've seen, you're looking at the congressional record, lots of things pass. But those, that ironically, the things that are passed, are single subject bills, but they're meaningless stuff. It's renaming a highway, you know, after some president or some lobbyist, I would imagine. But those types of things, those single subject bills pass all the time. But the one subject, one bill, or single subject rule, as it's referred to, it's a constitutional law in some jurisdictions, you know, but it certainly is not, you know, like Australia is pretty well known for that. And it's a reform that's long been advocated, along with other things that will never pass, like term limits and flat taxes and things like that. So great idea and concept, because that's where all the junk gets thrown in. As you said, at closing, there's just stuff sitting around that's waiting to attach itself to a bill, which always reminds me of that definition of politics, right? Politics meaning, poly meaning many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. So you got a lot of these little things that are sitting around trying to attach themselves to a bill, and that's not going to change. You know.
Jeff, are you surprised? I mean, I am. I'm. I'll be honest. I used to have an awful lot of faith in human nature. I honestly thought if we ever got in a situation where we were in really bad shape and really broke, that some of these people would lay off at least for a little while. And I'm stunned that it doesn't matter if you're getting a check from the government. You don't deserve. You don't care if they're flat ass broke. You want your check. I think they're worse than the mob, for God's sake, in that regard. I mean, some of the stuff, these entitlements, you'd swear these guys are floating in money, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to end. So are you going to make sure that you're only going 5 miles an hour over the limit now as you drive around the city?
Well, I'll pay my Uber driver to speed. It's, you know, what can you say about it? It's absolutely true. I'd be very curious to see if something I brought up to a local Chicago attorney who deals in fraud cases, what's his name, Neil Levin, well-known fraud attorney in Chicago. We were speaking about the extent of the fraud of in the PPP area and someone attempting to quantify it. And even though that's where a lot of their cases are coming from now, and that no one can even quantify it. They think it's just a massive amount of money that was inappropriated as a result of PPP to businesses that, you know, exist only as ledgers, or where that entire payroll that was supposed to be, you know, you have to pass through money through the payroll on PPP. 75% of it has to go to payroll to maintain those employees. Well, that just became an opportunity to put family on payroll and kind of wash those monies, you know, within a household. And that was one of the big frauds. And this will go not just undetected, nobody has it even on its radar to worry about it or think about it. So the amount of money lost, you know, as a kind of corollary to your point, there's people taking the money and just don't need it. But more importantly, there's people that are aggressively positioning themselves for that money.
Jeff, I'm going to
we'll never see an accounting.
I'm going to push back a little bit on that, not because you're wrong, because you're absolutely not. Matter of fact, I think you're more right than you know. not directionally, that you're more correct than you know. But I'll say two things. One is the goal of this is, I'll use the term from the economist's point of view, and by the way, I'm agreeing with you 100%.
Mm-hmm.
This was helicopter money.
Yes.
This is the new monetary theory that you talked about
the
one day.
Yep.
They don't care. As long as the money gets out there, they don't care if your dog is on the payroll.
Yep.
Now, you and I would, right, if you're saying it's fraud. They don't care. Matter of fact, when people got, I'll put the $2,000, what do we get, $1,200 check, in the same thing. If your family member just died, They were telling you to cash the check.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that's a Social Security check, that's fraud. But they didn't care. They wanted the $1,200 out there. Hence the term helicopter money. Drop it out of the helicopter. And if somebody grabbed $200 bills instead of, you know, somebody else didn't get any, well, he was quicker. They don't care.
Yeah,
I
don't disagree at all. In fact, but I would say the irony of that is that for those who have a more liberal monetaristic policy kind of theory and are worried about income inequality and the income gap, that the irony is that those same people are advocates of helicopter money, and all this does is perpetuate that income gap and income inequality, because the people who are most apt to abuse this system are in a position to do so. So that, you know, that the fraudulent uses of PPP are by the business class, and it's not by, you know, people on food stamps.
But it's the first time that you and I, and I'll give it a an example here. I shouldn't, but I will. If you sat on the board of the CBOE, and you all of a sudden you had some firm that was like taking the other side of trades or doing stuff that was, you know, I mean, should have been a felony, really. But that was a firm doing it, and we needed the business from the firm. Well, that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But God help us if Mike Hart, our buddy, our combined buddy, mm-hmm. Was over position limit by like four contracts 3 months in a row. Now, he's a recidivist, and he's one of our guys, and he's flouting the law that affects us, and he's on our level. Well, we want him horsewhipped in the public square, right? And the same thing now. What you and I, and I've read, by the way, I read the list of
by
these
the way,
people.
That, what you just said is just so true. That is such the dirty little secret, and I have an anecdote to share on that. But please.
What I'm saying is, remember this when you talk to your friend. And by the way, if you guys have an adult beverage, just please invite me. It's only 20 to 25% of all the money in that bill went to the $1,200 checks and went for the PPP. The other 75 or 80% of it went to people we don't even know in sizes we can't even comprehend. So we're so worried about the guy getting the $1,200 check who shouldn't have. Meanwhile, look at this number on this particular bill. I'm going to say you probably have read more of it than me. I will guess that out of the $15 billion that go to airlines under the proviso that airlines hire people back and pay people, I'm going to say there's no limit. There's not a $50,000 salary limit for anybody. That the head of United Airlines, who did nothing but buy stock back, is probably paying himself whatever his full salary is, $2.5 million a year, when a company has no money.
Right.
So we don't even look at that, yet we're so worried about, you know, Joe's pizza joint that was selling pizza all the way through the deal. In fact, had his best 4 months on pizza because nobody could eat inside anywhere, actually got a PPP loan, right? I mean, and we're outraged.
Yep.
But in the whole scheme of things, it's not even a pimple on the ass of an elephant, right?
That's exactly right, and that's, you know, that's the great scam of these bills, is that so little money gets, you know, ends up to the intended recipient, and those with influence are, you know, are privileged. And you're right about your trading analogy. I'll just share a quick anecdote, and I'll be careful because of its implication, but all being true, back in the 80s, I was active in the Chicago markets and in the futures markets, not as a trader, but working in a senior level with the exchanges and some brokerage firms and in different capacities. I was still in my early 20s, and there was a seasonal pork belly spread that had a like 94% outcome, and I'm kind of a probability guy and been watching this thing and researching this spread. Remember the spreads that used to have high outcomes that, you know, people would be playing, seasonal spreads. Well, this one was as close to a sure bet as you can get. It was just a spread that always worked and always delivered.
Operative word there being close.
Yeah. And thanks. and as a youngster, the numbers were compelling to me, so I loaded up my largest trade ever, $50,000. I've never done anything like that. It was way be outside my capacity to lose money in my early 20s. And started off fine enough, but in a very, very short period of time, it just went completely awry because McDonald's introduced a McRib sandwich and threw everything off. Everything. Just threw the whole trade off. So I'm in the toilet on it, and I'm really backward on it. At the same time, and this is where it gets touchy, I can't say who, but a highly, highly recognizable name in the Chicago futures industry of the past was trying to recruit me to be to run one of his operations. And he offered to make the trade go away. which was an amazing thing to me because I looked at the influence in the box. I said, "Yeah, we'll just give it to somebody else." And I did not accept that offer. That meant I'm not accepting the offer with this person, who, quite frankly, I always wanted to work with, but it just didn't pass my smell test.
Was your name Hillary?
I'm not going to get into the names, but no, it was not Hillary. But a well-known Chicago name in the history of the futures markets. And that it just kind of tells you what you're just saying, that it was with privilege and access, you know, usually enjoy the fruits. But
well, this routine now, or are we just going
to... And that's why I've never had the McRib sandwich ever and don't intend to.
Well, that can happen. And there was a book, and I don't know if you can find it. But I had one, and I think I was still living at home. It was way when I first started. I think it fell victim to a flood in my parents' basement. But for those of you, we never really talk about it, but we should maybe someday when you're on, Jeff, because you understand the futures markets. Futures markets are so different. Every futures product, it's almost like kung fu. Every style takes a lifetime to learn. And there was a book that would give you all these kinds of spreads, like Jeff's talking about.
Sure, yeah.
Where you'd go long December, short July, say in the corn.
All the seasonal agricultural spreads.
It would give you every year that it worked. It would say, this works 90% of the time. You can pretty much count on it. But the years that it doesn't work, like if you're too big, you're carried out feet first. Because if all of a sudden the July runs ahead of the December, I mean, you're screwed. Right? Yeah, I mean, usually it's...
A lot of McRib sandwiches out there.
Usually it's so violent that you have no chance of even attempting to make the thing right. I mean, it means that there's a flood where stuff can't get something that's crazy happens that you can't deal with. It's an act of God and you're not God, basically, right?
It's really true. Yeah, the spreads were... Future spreads trading was the equivalent of... I'm a closed-end fund arbitrage. You know, there's those with closed-end equity funds, right? There's a premium and discounts that are pretty consistently. You can trade those when there's a dislocation that provides, you know, a good arbitrage opportunity. And those are pretty much based on historical activity. And futures trading looked the same way on these kind of, you know, future spreads. They compile all this data, but you know, let's listen. You know, it's an early lesson to learn that past performance doesn't mean anything about going forward.
Well, they can give you the percentages, but they never once said, by the way, if it's the 5% year, you're not in trouble. I
mean, that's right. Yeah, it's like Nate Silver's percentages for, you know, Biden to win Florida.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah,
well, exactly. For the listeners, I'll go into this a little bit because we're coming up to break, because I know we've been talking about something that's a little probably over everybody's head here, but... If you have IBM or General Motors or JP Morgan, name a stock, if you buy an option out a year or you buy an option tomorrow or sell one or whatever, you're talking about JP Morgan, they could go broke, a lot of things could happen, but by and large, JP Morgan is the same company a year from now as it is now. Right? I mean, obviously it could be different prices, a lot of bad stuff could happen, a lot of good stuff could happen, but December corn is a totally different crop than July corn. It's not the same underlying other than the fact that it's named corn, right?
That's right.
I mean, they're totally different. I mean, the December could be some spectacular year of a harvest, and July could be last year's horrible harvest, and there isn't a bushel around to be had, right? It's not the same. So whether you want to go buy corn from somebody in January when everybody thinks everybody's going to be flush is a whole different transaction than buying it tomorrow where everybody opens up their bin and says there isn't a grain in there, right? You're not going to have that with stock.
That's why you got to pay Mr. Beeks to get the crop report.
what a great seed. I can see you doing that. Some of the things sliding across the... I also had an interesting offer for a job when I got out of school for one of the big names over there, and I will go nameless. And I said, you know what, I'm going to go work at regular jobs for a while. And that's when I went to Pullman and Allied Van Lines and places. And I think it was probably the right thing for me mentally. I'm not so sure money-wise if I would have been better off just coming down and working for those guys.
I think I still want that 50 grand of pork belly spread back.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. I mean, I mean, I probably should have, but I would have not been, say, intellectually as varied. I would have not met an awful lot of spectacular people that I met at Pullman and Allied. So I don't know. I'm not unhappy the way I went, but I think if I was going to own a Rolls Royce, I'd have been better off the other way than this.
And Chief, your integrity's intact, right?
Well, that's true. I mean, you know what? That's one thing. When you were a trader, you needed that. Everybody says all these people on the floor were thieves. I never met a more honest group of people in my life.
That's true.
I mean, if we played golf in these tournaments where there was a lot of betting on it. We did those Calcuttas, and there were a lot of betting on it. And we're talking about a foursome would win 10 grand or something. We never won. Well, we won the second day a couple times, so that was like a grand split up four ways. So it was still better than a sharp stick in the eye. But I mean, you could send these guys out. I mean, me being one of them, the chances of one of those foursomes cheating, good Lord, because you know it would get back to somebody. And if it ever got back that you cheated in one of these golf things, I mean, nobody would trade with you. I mean, your livelihood would be gone. I mean, tomorrow, if one of the guys, if some bank called me up and said, hey, this Jeff Joseph guy is looking for a mortgage, and we need a reference, and if I traded with you for 10 years and you never once DK'd a trade or anything like that, I'm going to say, you can trust Jeff. Just take his word. I don't have to sign anything. People think these people were thieves. They were not. Your word was your bond. I mean, you didn't sign contracts back and forth every time you made a trade. You just did a verbal thing. And I think in my 20 years, two people tried to stiff me, maybe three. And boy, oh boy, if I went back tomorrow and they were there, I still wouldn't trade with them. I mean, am I right, Jeff, or not?
Right.
I mean, everybody knew everybody's honesty level, and if yours wasn't tip-top, nobody wanted to trade with. S&P Futures now down 875, Nasdaq Futures down 46. Come back, we'll talk a little more about this election and what it might mean and what else might be affecting the market. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 7 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph with us as well from Luckbox Magazine. SP Futures down 12.50 now. We just dropped $7 during break, which is, that's how finicky this market is right now. It's NASDAQ futures down 60. They were just down 5. This NASDAQ is moving all over the place. Like, almost like a $50 range. Let me see what the Dow is doing here. The Dow's down 38. I think the Dow's down even more than that, but because that's more of a delayed feed. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got DAX down 99. That's 0.7%. FTSE up 99 cents. That's unchanged, so we say. CAC around down 42. That's 0.7%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 99.4%, Shanghai up 25.7%, Hang Seng up 177.4%. Just a way of review from yesterday's lousy day. Dow was down 382, 1.25% after being down over 600. S&P down 55, it's 1.5%. It was down about 90 at one point. NASDAQ down 189, 1.5%, and it was down almost 300. So we recovered some yesterday, but now we're leaking a little today. 10-year yield. 0.93, the Bund minus 0.59, Japan positive 0.02. Maybe we should put that on the tape. It's the same every day. Oil up 72 cents, 48.34. Brent up 77 cents, 51.86. Natural gas up a dime, 2.68. As it dropped down almost below 2.50 on mild weather predictions, but it must be at least coming back to not so mild, but we are creeping up a little bit there. RBOB up 2 cents, $1.39. And we've got gold up $4, was up like $40 yesterday, so it's $19.50, pretty up there. Silver up another 19 cents, $27.56. Copper up 4 cents, $3.59. Manny, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour, good morning once again to everyone out there. We have some issues to the southwest. Still working on that earlier crash from this morning on I-80 on the eastbound side at Cherry Hill Road near Joliet. There is a crash involving a semi that has crews on the scene, and this is causing major congestion on the eastbound side of I-80 as the left lane remains blocked. So expect delays navigating around that. That's at Cherry Hill Road, which is exit 132 on I-80 eastbound near Joliet. Also, we have a crash on the Tri-State southbound just before 111th Street, blocking the two right lanes. This is due to a car fire that's blocking the two right lanes. So solid traffic on the Tri-State southbound just before 111th. That's causing major issues. And then west of there on the Stevenson inbound side at I-355, there's a crash. So a few crashes within a few miles of each other that are causing major delays. No issues coming in on the Ryan or I-57. Bishop Ford looks good, too. The Eisenhower has been quiet all morning. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Off the expressways, western suburbs, Route 59 at Mack Road, there is a crash. Weather today, clouds early. We should see some sunshine later on and a high of 38. Right now it's cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 71 today. Right now it's clear and 44. In sports, nothing doing last night. Very quiet night, but the Bulls are back in action this evening. They're taking on the Blazers in Portland. That's a 9:30 p.m. tip-off Chicago time. Chief.
So you two guys are equitable sort of people. We did have one major, shall we say, rules outrage regarding the golf, right? So the way we played it was everybody had to use, for those that don't know, it's a scramble, right? But sure. Most scrambles that you play, anybody can hit the drive, right? But in this particular one, you had to use everybody's drive three times. And we played up at...
which is a better version of
a
scramble.
Yeah, we played up at Black Wolf Run, and we played the Blue Tees. And Black Wolf Run probably has, out of the 18 holes on either course, I'm going to say 7 or 8 holes where, unless your D player at least could hit the ball a little bit, he couldn't even carry from the tee to wherever you needed to be, the fairway, right? Or
got to use them on par threes.
Yeah, or the par threes sometimes had a big gulf of garbage between you and the green, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, one of the guys, he gets to the last hole, and everybody's used all their drives except their D player needs a drive. And their D player is, you know, stone cold horrible, right? So the hole's maybe 175 yards over just a chasm of crap. But the tee is maybe 50 yards long. So what do you think he does? I mean, he's a sneaky little crap. like the guy said in Animal House. What do you suppose he does?
So he duffs it 40 yards, and then your A player uses his second shot, who puts it on the green, and you got a par putt.
Well, worse than that, Jeff. What would be sneaky here? And on the trading floor was always just and equitable principles of trade, right? Governed everything.
I'm in the sneaky competition. I would go with Matt. I think he's got me beat.
So you guys aren't sneaky enough. What my buddy, I'll use his first name, Mike, decides he's their A player.
Hold on.
He goes, pull out your putt.
Think for a minute. Hold on.
Yeah, think for a minute.
So he has him putt off
the tee. He has him putt like 30 yards and not leave the tee. Just get like 30 yards closer because the tee was really long. So he has him putt down to the end. And, of course, when people find out about it, they're outraged because this is against the just and equitable principles of golf. You're supposed to be trying to hit the ball on the green. And of course, Mike did put it on the green, and somebody canned the putt, so they didn't get their three. People were pissed. But, again, they had – so this is serious stuff. So they ended up calling a big meeting of all the A players and got in a room, and they decided, okay, since there had been no rule against something like that, it was okay, but never again. You couldn't putt off the tee.
So, to me, that's not a rules violation in any way.
Sure.
Against just and equitable principles.
You can use any club at any point in golf.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying that's how strict these guys were. So the next day, we're in the exact same spot, right? We get to the last hole, and it turns out it's the same par three, and we got our D player who's horrendous. I mean, we couldn't use the guy. I mean, literally,
we're taking Thomas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about on a par five, we're taking a 50-yard drive thinking that's the best we're going to get out of the guy.
Oh, man.
So he tees up, and everybody's sitting there going, how bad is this going to be? He shanks the thing straight sideways into the trap from the hole before. So we head over, and we got to hit it out of this trap, right? So there's guys on the green, and they go, what are you idiots doing down here? And we go, this is where our guy hit it. He goes, who could have hit it there? Sure enough, Kevin plunks it on the platform, and somebody cans like a 25-footer. We get on three.
Oh my God!
I could. The chances of that were in your exchange would have been 1 in 100, Jeff. but Kevin got a great cover. He's like a 3-iron out of this trap up on the green, and somehow it stuck up there. But
my quick scramble story involves Thomas, who's contributed to the show before, who is
not contribute to a scramble.
Yes, he is a D, to say the least, but a good soul and definitely gave a good effort. Well, we were in a similar position where we had to use his drive. Last hole, it's a par three, and it's not a super long par three, but long enough, like 160, but you have to clear a bunch of crap. So Thomas takes out his driver, and everyone's like, what are you doing, man? And sure enough, he whacks a line drive that lands about 20 yards short of the green, rolls up, and is within 6 feet of the hole.
He couldn't do that again.
He couldn't do it again if his life depended on it. And it was a terrible drive. I mean, you would never use that on a par four, but it was on a par three, and it just happened to roll right up to the green. Someone cans the birdie putt, and Thomas is the hero.
Well, we had some pretty good guys, good golfers on the floor, so we would play Black Wolf Run from, which is a, you know, it's a real tough course, and we'd play the blue tees, and the winning score was always like -7, -8.
Which
that's really good.
Yeah.
And, cause there were guys that were, you know, that's what having to use the three. That's why a guy like, JD was always a really good D, because you could always get his drives in. I was one of the most sought after Cs, because we would use half my drives all the time, no matter who was on it.
If you're a C or a D, but you do one thing really well, you're a valuable scramble player.
Well, I was always, you know, I just didn't play enough. I was always, I could hit all the shots and stuff, and I could putt decent and stuff. So, I mean, But it's funny. You do need a hot putter, though. I mean, you need
somebody. You do, but I hate scrambles where you don't have to use everyone's drive, because then it's just what's the point?
Yeah, where is
you
the
do have to have a rule, whether it's, you know, one drive per nine or, like you said, three drives per 18 or whatever it is. You got to use everyone's
drive. You wouldn't think three was a lot, but at that place,
it's a lot.
You got to heck, it's a lot. All right, Jeff, back to what are the chances here of the yesterday, some people were very concerned about the market coming unglued or giving up some of, you know, I'm going to say, my guess is, and again, this is, you know, this in 25 cents will get you a phone call if you could find a phone. I think the market is probably 20% pumped up because of the Fed, 20 to 25. Now, that doesn't mean it's ever going to go down. It hopefully will grow into it, and it won't ever collapse. I mean, I don't want that for my clients or for me. But, right now, it's a little wobbly. I mean, if all of a sudden these guys get a big inflation number that they believe, which they never will, they'll keep rigging the number. But if they get something that they believe, and all of a sudden everybody says, "Hey, what the hell?" and these long term rates start to march up, I think they got a problem. I mean, some of these companies are just, you know, you always start talking 10 times revenue, you're toppy. I mean, those are 2000 prices. I mean, I think they need to stop pumping at least. But they're talking $60-70 billion a week they're pouring in. I mean, it's, you know, it's $10 billion a day at the end of the day. That's why no matter what happens, if the market's quiet, we leak up. The money's just there, but there's got,
and I would not bet on that pumping changing anytime over the next 6 months in any way.
Well, they won't want to. They won't want to, Jeff, but they
won't want to. You know, I think it's fair to say, and it's not because of, you know, a Democratic. Well, it is. I mean, the markets. I think the one thing that's often said that I truly believe is to be accurate is that the markets do prefer, a check and balance government. So, I think it's not unlikely that you'll see a retracement if the Democrats prevail on the Senate vote. And it's not about Democrats; it's just about not having. You know, they prefer a split house, and I think. So I think the market should be strong if Republicans win one of the two seats, at least over the short term, over the next couple weeks. But clearly we're lofty up here, right? I mean, I would think so.
Well, Jeff, I'm going to not necessarily push back, but I'm going to say when people say stuff like what the market prefers, I think every time it's somewhat different. And when Reagan came through with the big tax decrease, which everybody remembers from that age, and that's what made Dutch the big hero, nobody remembers that the tax decrease was horribly thought out. And within like a year, they had to pass the biggest tax increase because they were going broke, right? So at this point, our government has just spent essentially 3 years worth of taxes in 1 year, and they're pushing for more. So the idea that in this particular case, I don't think it has to do necessarily, well, who knows? Again, it's my opinion, which isn't worth anything either, but right now it's all about if there is a tax increase, how much of it's going to come down on corporations and dividends, right? So the idea of the Republicans get the Senate, whatever, but I don't think either side now. I don't care if you could be Republican, you could be from Mars. The thought that these guys don't feel they need more revenue. I mean, now it's just a question of where they're going to get it. Now, the chalk would say that if the Republicans retain the Senate, there's going to be less of a gouge out of corporations and stock owners, meaning dividends. And that's why the market right now probably prefers Republican Senate. But it's not like there's not going to be any attempt to get revenue. But I would anticipate a gas tax, an increase in Social Security tax, an increase in unemployment. That's what Reagan's legacy is, that he cut taxes on all the big people, and then when it came time to raise the taxes because they were broke, the taxes went on the, he put taxes, it wasn't gas tax, but he increased Social Security, he increased all the other taxes on other people. So at the end of the day, you had a decrease for the high end and an increase for the low end. So, I mean, right now, it's not so much that these guys are going to try and raise revenue. It has to do with, is it going to come on businesses' hide or other people's hides? And the bet, I think, for the Republicans in the Senate is less of it's going to come out of business hides if that retains its Republican spot. But I'm not so sure that there isn't one Republican someplace that isn't going to vote for increase of corporate taxes at least a little bit. I mean, do you? I can't imagine that being unanimous when they're broke.
No, I would agree with that. Yeah.
And all it's going to take is one. I mean, there isn't one person that says that the corporate tax rate can go back from, 21 to 25 without harming somebody?
Well, I think it's even complicated by some actually interesting data that hasn't seen a lot of airtime. But instead of being anecdotal with respect to the actual impact of the 2017 tax cuts, the IRS came up with some data that was just published within the last couple of days referring to the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And what it showed is that despite the concerns as to who the beneficiaries of the tax cut was going to be, of course, you know, the talking point being a tax cut for the rich, etc. But, and I'm quoting here, it says in 2018, the first year for which we have had numbers on the tax cut effect, wealthiest Americans paid a greater portion of the burden than they did before. Very specifically, the share of federal income taxes paid increased for the top 1% from 38.5% to 40.1%. On top of this, the share of income taxes paid by the top 5% and top 10% and top 50% all increased. And so despite the talking point that this was a tax cut for the rich, this was the most progressive tax cut that we've ever had, and tax burdens fell higher based on actual revenues and based on actual data, and it's very clear cut. And it's not because of a trickle down voodoo thing; it was because of the SALT, state and local income tax deductions. When that deductivity was capped at $10,000, that really hit the high earners in states like ours, Illinois and New York and California, where there's high property taxes, because they weren't deductible beyond $10,000. And that's why the Trump tax cuts were the most progressive tax cuts that we've had.
You read that. Is that your opinion, or you read that?
No, it's actual data from the IRS. I'll send it to you after the show, though. You'll find it interesting.
If it's
just came out within the last 48 hours.
If it's exactly like you described, I'm going to say the conclusions are total BS. And I'm going to say that for one reason, is that the way you described it was, over the year after the people who had the one percenters actually paid a higher percentage, I'm going to say that they also had a higher percentage of the income. But they didn't separate that out. You don't understand what I'm saying? Statistically, if the next year, if you lower the rate on the rich people, but because the one percenters, and I'm just lobbing this out there, because you can do whatever you want with statistics. If the next year the one percenters picked up 10% more of the income in the country, or 5%, and it turns out they paid 1% more in taxes, they're still 4% ahead.
Well, that's possible, because the data most likely refers to a percentage of the total tax receipt.
Right.
So that would be that's very likely. You have to parse down further to see if that's indeed the case. So they might have they might have baked a bigger pizza and got a bigger pie in general, but their slice was cut larger and they still netted out ahead. So that's distinctly possible from this data that I'm looking at. But I'll send it to you, and we'll make sure we walk through it next week, next time up.
By the way, both of you guys, my good buddies, is that about as cynical as you can get? What I just did?
No, that's accurate. That's the right way to look at data. Yeah.
Because you always have to look at what are they really saying here? What's the agenda? What are they trying to tell me?
In fact, let's see. As I recall, last time out I quizzed you both, so I'll lay another one on you. We are now working on our next issue of Luckbox is going to be about the about IQ and intelligence measurement and what it actually means, and we're working with Mensa on the issue and looking at a lot of different factors. But a UC Davis professor about 2 years ago took a variety of different data and tried to reconstruct IQ scores for past American presidents, 1 through 43. It's not perfect. It's not like a Mensa or Welsher test. So there is an opportunity for error, but he was, you know, he's a bona fide intelligence tester and researcher, so that there was some distinct credibility to the numbers and to his results. So he ranked all the presidents 1 through 43. So let's see who can name, let's say, one or two of the guys in the top five.
I tried to go through this and with the one of those things on the internet, and there were so many commercials every time you flipped to another president, I ran out of gas. I only made it to like five. But they had all these guys well into the 150s and 140s, most of them.
In the top five, they've got them over 160, which is really high.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Those are really high numbers.
I'm going to say
Hoover. Anyone want to throw some guesses out?
I'm going to say Hoover is way up there.
No, not in the top five.
Because he was arguably, he was an engineer. He had stuff going on all over the world. He had how many degrees?
I would say, is Kennedy in the top five?
He is.
Yeah, Kennedy for sure. He's number one.
He's number four.
Okay, number four. I would definitely say
an estimate over about 155.
Oh, Roosevelt. Roosevelt had to be up there.
He is not.
Well, you know, here's. Can I back up a little bit on this, Jeff?
You're 0 for 2, Chief.
I know, but in my day, okay.
Well, you can back it up all you want, but you're 0 for 2.
No, but I'm saying.
I'll give you a hint. Number one is John Quincy Adams.
Okay, well,
with a score of 175, Harvard grad.
Wow.
Well, what I'm going with this is that I actually did some study on IQ tests back, I mean, we did some at the University of Chicago as well. And in my day, when I was in, because I was considered to be, I always had a pretty high IQ, okay, but. The definition was, and this, it had nothing to do, well, I won't say that. It had little to do with, quote, intelligence and imagination, those kinds of things. The definition clearly was, it was the intellectual age divided by your chronological age times 100. And it was designed to predict how well you were going to do in the school system as it was presently set up. So if you were 14, if you could do 14-year-old work in the current school system and you were only 10, your IQ was 140. The idea, now these guys are doing this stuff, they're trying to back into this and saying what talents do people have. I mean,
Good for you, Chief. That's why you're such a value to your listeners. That is so accurate. We just interviewed for the issue a guy named Frederick DeBauer, who just issued a book called The Cult of Smart. Subtitle is How Our Broken Education System Perpetuates Social Injustice. And he speaks of IQ extensively and actually agrees with Charles Murray on some major topics, even though this guy DeBoer that we've interviewed for the next issue is a devout Marxist and believes that that exactly what you just said, is that all the evidence is that IQ is a measurement of potential academic prowess.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And that, as a result of it, it's true that he said, I know the politically correct world doesn't want to identify differences of IQ among race and gender, but they exist and that they're pronounced. But more importantly, they're pronounced among people. And that people of high IQ is only an indication of how well they're going to succeed in schooling, and that our schooling needs to be adjusted in a manner that reflects different outcomes.
Why
so it's exactly what you just said.
But why can't
it's
we
a
just
controversial theory, but it's really well documented.
But why can't we just say it is what it is? I mean, it predicted that I would do well in the schools is currently can. And I remember the test because I took one when I went to high school.
That's right.
We had a lot of math, had a lot of those spatial things where these are the first three figures.
Sure.
What are the next?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It had a lot of grammar and had a lot of stuff. But now I would say that if you were to take some kid from the ghetto, he would not do anywhere near as well as I would, and he wouldn't have done well in the school is currently constituted. That doesn't mean he's not
and
a
so
smart.
What? It and, doesn't, and so what?
That, but right. That doesn't mean he's. I mean, Thomas, I would guess, our buddy, I would guess that on an IQ test, he doesn't come close to me. If Thomas is a brilliant artist, if I drew a stick man, he'd be a fatso. I have zero ability in that area. I have zero ability in languages.
What brings his point home so well, and again, a devout Marxist, speaking to the problems with the education system, but agreeing with Charles Murray on the dispersion of IQ and intelligence among, you know, society, is that he uses a parallel metaphor would be, you know, some people have athletic prowess.
Yeah.
Some people don't. So what? But why are we, but we don't send everybody and try to make them succeed in an athletic university with an athletic curriculum. And yet that's what we're doing with academic prowess.
Well, but I,
so
see,
it's a compelling point.
Right. But it isn't. I mean, I only got 30 seconds, but we'll kick this around again next week. But you want people to come out of school with language skills, with math skills, and being able to spatially look at things. It's not the fact that I have an advantage over somebody. It means we have to work harder and get the other guys able to do the math and the language, because that's how we live.
Yeah, but unfortunately we don't succeed
We also don't think of it that way.
Part two of it.
Yeah, but I mean, it means we need better education and we need those things in other areas. It doesn't, right? I mean, it means that somebody else's mom wouldn't read to them as much. We got to catch them up. Doesn't mean you don't want it, right?
No, actually, you can make the case that you don't want it, that you want to find the areas that those people are prone to succeed instead, whether they be trades or creativity or construction or whatever it might be, that instead of trying to have all students fit within one space, that education should be more adaptable to a student's proclivity and his natural skill
level,
our education system doesn't try to find that in individuals. It tries to put everybody into one outcome box.
I mean, there's
winners and losers.
Well, the ones I took were so basic. I mean, I was in eighth grade, so they were so basic. The idea that somebody doesn't have to know how to add or subtract, I don't buy that, Jeff.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I mean, we're not talking about...
But we do have calculators.
I know, and we shouldn't need them to make change at a food store, but we do, it appears.
But how about it?
Anyway, right. Jeff, thank you very much, buddy. Happy New Year. We'll kick this around again next week.
Matt.
SP Futures now down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 69. We're going the wrong way here. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.